This is Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was assassinated today in Malaysia.
Upon arrival at the hospital, the doctor found that he is already dead.
VOA Steve Miller is here to examine what happened. Also ahead here in Washington, the Trump administration has lost its national security advisor. He resigned under pressure. And we'll tell you how you can control your levels of bad cholesterol. Perfect topic for Valentine's Day. It's all on today's International Edition. Now, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was assassinated today in Malaysia. That according to South Korea's Yonhap News Agency, and now more sources are chiming in with that. The report said that a South Korean government official immediately said Kim Jong-nam was killed. The official did not provide additional information. VOA's Steve Miller has lived and worked in Korea, and he joins us now. What's the latest on this, Steve?
Well, there's a lot of information that is currently and continuing to be released. And of course, this is a very fluid situation. But what we do know now is that Malaysian officials have confirmed that Kim Jong-nam was killed, apparently by at least one female assassin using some kind of needle device. Kim Jong-nam felt sick at the airport, requested medical attention, and then on the way to the hospital, he perished. Now, the U.S. government has sent out a statement saying that it strongly believes that North Korean agents carried out the killing of Kim Jong-nam. And when asked by VOA at the State Department, the State Department referred answer back to Malaysian authorities who are currently investigating the situation.
Yeah, we've heard that before. What is in the background? Who is this half-brother? What is his history? Now, he wasn't living in North Korea, right?
No, so Kim Jong-nam is the oldest brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Now, his mother is Sung Hae-rin, who was a movie star in North Korea. At one point, apparently, she moved to Moscow and apparently died in 2002. Now, in 2001, Kim Jong-nam made a lot of news because he tried to go to Tokyo Disneyland and on a forged passport and was picked up and then sent back. And since that time, he's kind of fallen out of favor with Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un's father, and has lived pretty much in self-imposed exile in Macau. And from time to time, he has criticized North Korea and called for some reform, which may have played into this.
Is there talk? I don't know if you can answer this or not. Is there talk that this indeed was directed or is part of an overall larger series of either assassinations or something happening as far as his brother's government is concerned?
Well, that would be speculation. But if we go back to when Kim Jong-un first assumed control of North Korea, you recall that he did take his uncle, Jang Sung-taek, out from his position of power within the North Korean government and did purge him. So a lot of analysts are liking this to that. And if it is true, this would be another very high level, even a ranking family member who is assassinated by the Kim regime.
You know, it's a serious thing that somebody dies. But as you said, as you came into the studio today, this is going to make one hell of a movie, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of elements here that you see in several screenplays.
Yep. Steve Miller, I thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Now, this is not the only story coming from North Korea, as you probably well know. South Korea Tuesday said the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, is focusing on boosting his country's nuclear and missile capabilities while seeking to consolidate his base of power. The Unification Ministry said ahead of this week's 75th birthday of Kim's late father, Kim Jong-il, the regime is strengthening its reign of terror. That goes along with the possibility of what happened today in Malaysia. It expects purges to continue and rights abuses to worsen. The assessment followed Monday's UN Security Council condemnation of Pyongyang's latest missile test, described as a new intermediate-range ballistic missile. Vladimir Yurchenko, Ukraine's ambassador, is this month's Security Council president.
During the consultations, members of Security Council were unanimous in condemning the recent ballistic missile launch conducted by Pyongyang. These launches are in grave violation of the DPRK's international obligations under UN Security Council Resolution 1718, 1874, 2087, 2094, 2270, and 2321. The members of the Council deplore all the Democratic People's Republic of Korea ballistic missiles activities, including these launches, noting that such activities contribute to the DPRK's development of nuclear weapons delivery systems and increased tension.
Tufts University Korea specialist Sun-Yoon Lee talked with VOA's Victor Beatty. He told Victor he doubts this latest UN statement will alter the North's behavior.
Any kind of rhetorical condemnation coming out of the UN Security Council or General Assembly doesn't have any kind of bite. It is not an enforceable measure. It is more a symbolic condemnation, which has no impact on North Korean behavior. Even statements coming out of Beijing or Seoul or Tokyo or Washington in the past, when people said this is absolutely unacceptable, it's a serious provocation, there will be serious consequences, have had no deterrent effect on North Korea. So the latest provocation by North Korea is more a riposte, a jab, instead of a hook, a knockout blow against the Trump administration to condition the Trump administration to put up with this kind of provocation, defiance, and blatant violation of several UN Security Council resolutions.
At a Washington news conference with Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, President Trump described the North as a, quote, big, big problem, and vowed, quote again, we will deal with that very strongly.
I hope so. North Korea is indeed an imminent threat, the lethal, growing lethal threat to U.S. security and the security of its allies in the region. So to continue to sort of try to sweep the North Korea problem under the rug and hope for the best, hope that China will rein North Korea in, as previous U.S. administrations have done, that is not a good policy.
Sun-Yoon Lee also said the North has made steady strides in its nuclear and missile programs, and the international community has been ineffective in its response. He says that it is time to go after the North's vulnerabilities, including its dependency on dollar-generated illicit activities. Let's check in what's happening on social media now. Andrew Palczewski joins us, as he does every day he possibly can when he's not on jury duty or whatever. And anything on this assassination story? It just happened a few hours ago, so I don't know how much has been generated.
Yeah, the details are starting to come in through social media from what little details we have. But really what we're seeing is a lot of speculation, comparisons to a spy novel even, that this assassination allegedly happened with two female assassins in an airport with some kind of needle full of poison, almost stranger than fiction. So a lot of speculation about who might be behind this and a lot of comments about how this went down. And I'm sure as we get more information, it's going to continue to develop on social media. Now, back to that story you were just talking about with the missile tests. Word of those missile tests came to President Trump on Saturday night while he was hosting Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe at Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club in Florida.
During dinner.
In fact, what happened was while he was having dinner, all of his advisors, President Trump's advisors, came gathering around and Prime Minister Abe's advisors and kind of almost put on a show for the club members who were dining there. The advisors were chatting with them. They were looking over documents in front of everyone else who was sitting there dining. And so what we saw were a few club members putting up pictures on social media of this whole scene going on. One thing that a lot of people noticed in the pictures is that some advisors are using the flashlights on their cell phones to illuminate some of the documents, which is troubling because people say that the cameras on the phones can be used to actually view those documents so they get hacked. So it's not very secure. So a lot of questions about that. One thing I've noticed is that a lot of those accounts and the posts on those accounts have been taken down in subsequent days.
By the owners or by whoever is doing something?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the club members who posted these things realized that it's sensitive and maybe decided on their own to take it down. Some of them might have been told to take it down by the administration, including one photo, a man who took a photo with a soldier who is carrying the so-called nuclear football.
Yeah, it looked like a selfie.
Yeah, it was something like a selfie where it's a gentleman who's carrying this, the nuclear launch information, and he said, "Hey, there's the guy who has the nuclear football." Well, that post has been taken down as well. So obviously some sensitive things that maybe they didn't want out on social media.
Yeah, I think maybe the guy who was carrying the nuclear football was probably charged with a penalty of fumbling. So we will see what happens.
Some kind of yardage penalty, something. But as you mentioned at the top of the show, though, today is Valentine's Day. So love is in the air, or at least on social media, as people are celebrating the ones they love. Celebrating their favorite things, one of which I think you're coming up to later on in the show. You're going to talk a little bit about some foods that people like on Valentine's Day. But it's also hashtag Singles Awareness Day, celebration of people who are single who don't celebrate Valentine's Day. I thought it was very interesting that Singles Awareness Day, the acronym is SAD. That's kind of unfortunate. But there, you know what, people are embracing that and having a lot of fun, saying, you know, I might not have somebody out there, but I'm going to go home and drink champagne and eat a great meal all by myself, and I'm going to enjoy it. And on a serious note there, today is also hashtag National Donor Day, encouraging people to be organ donors. So we're seeing a lot of things saying, have a heart, register to donate your organs. Even people giving testimonials from hearts that they've actually received on this Valentine's Day, saying that that heart is the greatest gift that they could have gotten. So a lot of that activism we're seeing as well, using Valentine's Day for a good cause.
Good stuff, Andrew. Appreciate it, as always. And people, please get in touch with us. Tell us what you like or what you don't like. No, if you don't like it, don't do anything. But if you like what we're doing, no, both, obviously. You get in touch with Andrew. If it's bad, don't get in touch with him, not me. And how do you do that?
You can find me at APAL, and you can find you at VOA Melman.
I thank you so much. Andrew Palshevsky with us on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has resigned after reports that he misled Trump administration officials about his contacts with Russia's ambassador to the United States. That story coming up just momentarily here on International Edition. NATO Secretary General says the alliance's defense ministers will focus on the need for members to increase the amount of money they spend on defense. The half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has been assassinated in Malaysia. And a U.S. federal judge rules that the case challenging the ban, the travel ban itself, will move forward, the Trump travel ban, while another federal judge issues a new injunction to keep that travel ban from being implemented in the state of Virginia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
To keep heart healthy, doctors recommend that you keep an eye on your cholesterol levels. But there are two main types of cholesterol: LDL, or bad cholesterol, and HDL, also known as good cholesterol. LDL cholesterol is bad because it builds up on artery walls, which leads to heart disease, heart attack, and stroke. HDL cholesterol, instead, is considered good because it helps remove LDL cholesterol from the arteries. A new study from the American Heart Association suggests that eating a Mediterranean diet enhanced with about 60 milliliters of virgin olive oil every day actually boosts levels of the good HDL cholesterol. A Mediterranean diet is one that features vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, and fish, but is low in carbohydrates and meat, especially red meat. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. U.S. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has resigned following widespread reports that he misled Trump administration officials about his contacts with Russia. In his resignation letter, Flynn said he had inadvertently briefed then-Vice President-elect Mike Pence and others with incomplete information regarding his phone calls with the Russian ambassador to the United States. Reports in the Washington Post and the New York Times last Friday said Flynn had discussed with the Russian ambassador the sanctions placed on Russia by the Obama administration in response to Moscow's interference in last November's presidential election. The Trump administration had denied reports that the talks dealt with that subject. However, the Post reported late Monday that the Justice Department had warned the administration that Flynn's conversations put him in a potentially compromised position. President Trump has named retired Army General Keith Kellogg as acting National Security Advisor. We welcome to International Edition Jeff Seldon, VOA's national security correspondent. What does this all point out? What is going on in the Trump administration?
Well, that's the question to which right now there are more follow-on questions than there are answers. People who I've spoken to who know Flynn, who have worked with him before, he has a reputation for being a firebrand, but he's also got a reputation for sometimes seeing conspiracies, sometimes where they may not be, as well as doing a very good job when he was in Afghanistan and Iraq of seeing conspiracies and links where they were. But no one I've talked to has ever said this isn't an intelligent guy. So how does he talk with a Russian ambassador, a former director of the DIA, a U.S. intelligence agency, and think somebody's not recording? It's almost protocol that any former director, especially somebody who's been ousted from an agency like he was with the DIA, where he was essentially fired, would be recorded by a matter of protocol. The FBI and NSA are always listening to the Russian ambassador's phone conversations. So the idea that he wouldn't know that somebody would have a transcript of exactly what he said, for a lot of people in the intelligence community, boggles the imagination. It just doesn't make sense. Either it was in a case of extreme hubris and arrogance, or he was acting under orders. And everybody I've talked to says he tends to be, again, while a firebrand, a bit of a team player, and he follows the orders. He's a military guy. So whose orders was he acting on? And even if you look at the reaction from the Trump administration, President Trump earlier on Tuesday tweeted, quote, "The real story here is why there are so many illegal leaks coming out of Washington. Will these leaks be happening as I deal on North Korea, etc.?" And so the president's own tweet indicates that the concern with him isn't so much the concerns that have been reported that the intelligence community had, that the CIA had, that the Director of National Intelligence had, that the Justice Department had, that given the discrepancies between what Flynn told Vice President Pence and what he actually did, that he was potentially open for blackmail by the Russians. That doesn't seem to be the concern that the president is portraying. So what is going on? Why was he having those conversations? And also, the reporting says that the administration knew about the full content of Flynn's calls and the transcripts for weeks. If that's the case, if they're not upset about the conversation with the Russians or the possibility of blackmail, what is going on?
The implication that you have posed here, and I'm sure you'll correct me if you don't agree, is that this is much wider than the decision of one man, General Flynn.
People who know Flynn would definitely suggest that. Now, look, it wouldn't be the first time that you had a very competent, high-ranking military official, very well-schooled in matters of intelligence, do something that got them in trouble. One of the possible replacements, one of the names that surfaced, is former general and former CIA director David Petraeus, who also lost security clearance and actually lost his job because of information he shared with a girlfriend with whom he was having an affair. So just because you're smart enough to know better doesn't mean you always act on that. But again, there are questions. And again, this also follows on ongoing concerns about the Trump administration's relationship and attitude towards Russia, where Trump, critics keep pointing out, Trump is loath to criticize Russia, bashed the intelligence community for their assessment that Russia interfered in the election, not by hacking actual voting machines, but by putting out false information and disinformation and hacking and releasing things that they hacked from the Democratic National Committee. The administration was aghast at that and strongly criticized the intelligence community for that. So there are lots of questions about what exactly is going on.
This story will continue. Jeff Seldon is VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, thanks for being with us, as always. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA. And as we said earlier, this is Valentine's Day. Americans shower their loved ones with gifts on this day, with chocolate candy being the most popular gift-giving item, according to a recent National Retail Federation survey. The organization estimates consumers will spend $1.7 billion on chocolates this year. That keeps Ben Rasmussen, who creates award-winning chocolates, especially busy this time of year. VOA's June So visited his one-man chocolate factory in the Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C. Carol Pearson narrates.
The ingredients may be simple, but making a good craft chocolate is anything but.
What you're eating is the result of a chocolate maker's creative choices. How they process the cacao, how they roast it, how they grind it, how they conch it, how they do all of these myriad things that go into the flavor of the chocolate. So my chocolate is a direct expression of my taste and my creative process, which is distinct from other people's, even if we use similar equipment.
For Ben Rasmussen, his chocolate love started about 8 years ago when he tasted a sample of gourmet dark chocolate. He said he fell in love with it instantly, and he started learning to make it by himself.
I learned how to make it just through the internet and through trial and error and kind of teaching myself, reading old books, study, and just doing it. Got some used equipment and started messing around with it. Fell in love with the process, and that's basically how I started.
In very short order, his company, Potomac Chocolate, was born. The bar from that first batch of chocolate he made in his kitchen was a finalist in that year's Good Food Awards, which is based out of San Francisco.
That bar also won an Academy of Chocolate Awards in 2011. I've won a couple of Academy of Chocolate Awards and a few International Chocolate Awards for different bars.
Winning those awards led to a high demand for his chocolate, and soon he moved his production out of his kitchen and to his basement, where he makes the chocolate now. Rasmussen also has built most of his own equipment by himself, but chocolate making is not his full-time job.
I'm a Linux systems administrator, a computer nerd, keeps me busy, so finding out how to balance the work, my day job, and chocolate is a real struggle, and especially considering the fact that I've got a family, 4 kids, so I'm a busy guy.
The busy guy makes about 140 kilos of chocolate every couple of weeks and sells them online and in high-end gourmet specialty stores.
The craft chocolate market is really exploding, and I make all of the chocolate myself. So it's a very small company, but it continues to grow. Every year has been better than the year before, and last year was the best by far.
Rasmussen says he constantly strives to be better today than he was yesterday and to make the best chocolate he can. For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
So if you haven't done so far, go out and get the chocolate for the one you love. This has been International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, as always, our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Central Command and Central Special Operations Command are at the very center of the U.S. fight against terrorism. Those serving at CENTCOM have bravely fought across the theater of war in the Middle East and bravely battled a vicious enemy that has no respect for human life, said President Donald Trump in a recent speech to the Central Command. He expressed the nation's gratitude to all serving overseas, including all of U.S. military personnel in Afghanistan. United States Special Operations Command has dispatched its legendary warriors to the most secret, sensitive, and daring missions in defense of the United States of America. No enemy, said President Trump, stands a chance against our special forces. The president noted that even though U.S. forces are well-trained and well-prepared, ISIS presents a very large challenge. We're up against an enemy that celebrates death and totally worships destruction, said President Trump. ISIS is on a campaign of genocide, committing atrocities across the world. Radical Islamic terrorists are determined to strike our homeland, as they did on 9/11, as they did from Boston to Orlando to San Bernardino. Europe also has suffered catastrophic terrorist attacks in Paris, Nice, Brussels, and Berlin. The United States is delivering a message in a unified voice, said President Trump. To these forces of death and destruction, America and its allies will defeat you. We will defeat them. We will defeat radical Islamic terrorism, and we will not allow it to take root in our country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.